questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back with Dads on the Air.
And we are back. This is Dads on the Air, this 25th day of October 2011, and it's a bit of a rainy old day today after a scorcher yesterday, 34 degrees in Sydney. So we've got a great show for you today. This is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and in the studio with me is Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning, Bill. Good morning, listeners.
And in today's show, we will be speaking with Jason Hinks, who is the Chief Operating Officer of Movember. You may have noticed that we are getting very close to Movember. In fact, next Tuesday, the first day of November, Melbourne Cup Day. So we're getting towards the end of Rocktober. October is Mental Health Month in New South Wales. And you might recall we've honoured that month by speaking to, among others, Andrew Robb last week. So this week we'll be speaking with Jason Hinks, Chief Operating Officer of Movember, and we'll also be speaking with David Gregory, who is in Melbourne. David has been diagnosed with and treated for prostate cancer, so he has a lot of very important messages for men, and particularly men over 40. So it'll be great to hear what David's got to say. And I might mention that next week we'll be starting a lead-up to International Men's Day once again. International Men's Day this year is on 19 November, and the theme is giving boys the best possible start in life. And we've got a number of very exciting guests lined up for that program. We'll be speaking to Steve Bidoff in connection with International Men's Day. He's an International Men's Day ambassador, and it'll be great to speak to Steve again. So that's all coming up. And before we get any further, we should also mention again our website address. Our website address has changed. Our new website address is www.dadsontheair.com.au. And if you go to that site, you'll see all the usual features. You'll see the past shows. There's a lot of research material and a lot of interesting things for you to look at.
Absolutely.
Including this week's show, which will be going up very shortly. So, before we get to all that, we might just have a look at some of the items that have caught our eye over the last week or so in news types events. First of all, I should mention we've been advised by the One in Three campaign that they have put a submission to the New South Wales Legislative Council on domestic violence trends and issues in New South Wales. This is an inquiry that's currently being conducted by the New South Wales Legislative Council. The main points put forward by One in Three to the in their submission were, firstly, the existence of male victims and female perpetrators needs to be acknowledged by government legislation, policy and programs. For way too long, there's been a focus just on the female victims of male aggressors, but that's only part of the story. For more information, you need to go to the One in Three website. The submission from One in Three also calls for the provision of perpetrator programs to be statewide. Community health counselling services would be the logical provider. They say that psychological counselling needs of perpetrators must be met. This is rarely the case in groups based on the Duluth model. One in Three would recommend the use of GPS bracelets, but only in such rare cases where the evidentiary basis for an AVO is sufficient, or an ADVO. The apprehended domestic violence order. Domestic and family violence policy needs to recognise all victims and perpetrators, including children, carers and extended family members. Why this focus on just the women victims of male perpetrators? There should be a gender profiling of offenders and victims in legislation. The gender profiling of offenders and victims in legislation must be removed. It must be the only legislation in Australia, maybe in the world, where there is actual commentary on the gender of the likely offenders. The assistance and accountability of police services needs to be improved, and the New South Wales Health Domestic Violence Screening Tool should be expanded to include men as well as women. So you can get to that submission. I think it's now being made. All the submissions should be made public soon. There was a public hearing on the 17th of October. There will be another one on the 7th of November, and although the submission closing date has already passed, so that's one we'll be following, and hopefully there'll be some common sense coming out of the terms of reference for this inquiry by the Legislative Council of New South Wales. Now, I might just mention now an event for the Australian Association for Infant Mental Health. They are presenting Bonnie Harris, who is the Director of Connective Parenting and the author of When Your Kids Push Your Buttons, and also Confident Parents, Remarkable Kids. Now, the association is offering a one-day seminar and 4 days training. This is going to be held, the one-day seminar is being held on either Saturday the 5th or Monday the 7th of November 2011. The seminar will be held in two locations, at Carramar on Saturday, at North Sydney on the Monday. The cost for the seminar is $150 for an early bird, or $180 for the full registration. And the four-day training, which runs from Tuesday the 8th to Friday the 11th of November at the Mary McKillop Centre in North Sydney, that training is at a cost of $800. It is limited to 15 people, and it also, your registration fee includes the book When Your Kids Push Your Buttons. So I think this is very topical, particularly in view of the program that's being watched by significant numbers at the moment, the slap on the ABC. And this seminar is directed at what they call connective parenting. Connected parenting is dedicated to guiding parents in the discovery of why both they and their children behave and respond in the way they do. In short, misbehavior is seen through the perception that the child is having a problem, not being a problem. And the revolutionary parenting style means that the parents take responsibility for 100% of everything they say and do, but do not take responsibility for the child's feelings or behaviour. So this is on the premise that when parents perhaps lose control, slap the children, perhaps even do worse things, it's all based on a tradition of reward and punishment. Most parenting has fallen short for generations on this basis, and the main reason is that it doesn't work. So this is a new approach. It's what to do when kids push your buttons. That's the name of the book, and in the seminar and the training will be devoted to that. It is particularly aimed at fathers, but as many parents as possible should try and attend this seminar from Bonnie Harris. If more information... You could go to the website of the Australian Association for Infant Mental Health. For accommodation, you can log on to marymckillopplace.org.au, and there'll be a link there to accommodation. So yes, I would commend that seminar to you, and the one day seminar and the 4 day training, if you can get to that. For registration, go to this website. It's www.waimhi.org, and click on News and Events. So either Australian Association for Infant Mental Health, or just go to waimhi.org.
Okay.
Now, perhaps on a lighter note here, I've just noticed that Shane Warne's come out, and he's had a very candid...
What, he's admitted he's gay? I mean, no. Come out, I don't think so.
Perhaps wrongly chosen.
Wrong, bad choice
there.
Yes.
But he's opened up, perhaps I should say, in a candid interview...
Again?
With...
He didn't just send a whole lot of text messages this time, he actually opened his mouth.
Another... as you say, another candid interview, but... he talks about his relationship with Elizabeth Hurley, even though that he says, I'm quite surprised that he has not signed a prenup. He says that he's really not rushing towards marriage, although they are engaged, because he says for the first time in his life he's really comfortable where he's at, and their priority at the moment is to integrate all the various children. Shane Warne has two daughters and a son from his previous marriage to Simone Callaghan, and Elizabeth Hurley has one child, Damien, who's 9. So that's their priority. Then they'll think about getting married, and uh, I th- in view of the financial situations of both of them, though, maybe they should look at a prenup. But anyway, that's one of the many things for Shane Warne to think about as time goes by.
Oh, well, yeah, he does a lot of thinking, I'm sure.
That's right.
Fitted into his really busy thinking schedule. Another subject for his overtaxed mind.
Yep. Now, I might refer you to an article in the Sydney Morning Herald on the 22nd of October in which fathers' roles were linked to teen boys' behaviour. This article was written by Amy Corduroy. The paper to which she refers has come to the conclusion that teenage boys with a father figure are less likely to engage in delinquent behaviour. Now, this is supportive of lots and lots of other studies. But the
it's pretty obvious, though, isn't it?
The interesting thing that she came up with, that the study came up with, as reported by Amy Corduroy, is her conclusion that the presence or absence on the absence of father figures appears to have little relationship with the chances that adolescent girls will engage in delinquent behaviour. Now, in fact, this is commented on by Dr. Richard Fletcher, who's been on this program before. Dr. Fletcher said that when he looked at the research, it found that growing up with a biological father who did not live with the family but talked with his daughter was linked to the daughter having a slightly increased risk of becoming involved in crime or drug dealing. But more importantly, the study is really a very crude measure of these changes in coming up with these conclusions, because the study which measured parental involvement by asking teenagers about issues they had talked to their parents about could not identify the quality of those conversations. That would seem to be a fairly basic requirement. But Dr. Fletcher said he was interested in finding that the amount of money fathers contributed to the family if they were not living at home did not seem to influence problematic behaviour. So that goes against some of the reasons for being of the Child Support Agency in arguing that they should extract more and more money from the father. It does not seem to influence problematic behaviour, but the absence of the father is certainly the more concerning aspect of raising children, and the effect that it has certainly on young men, and most other studies would also say with young women growing up.
Well, definitely. I mean, young women growing up tend to go through puberty more often if their biological father's not around. I mean, that's one of the, I think, the documented results of fatherlessness and on young women, as opposed to young boys who tend to develop puberty more late in life as a result of not having a father. But that is a physiological reaction to fatherlessness, which, you know, I mean, whether you think it's a good thing that women mature earlier sexually, you know, that's a matter of opinion, I suppose.
So, yes, there are no doubt a range of consequences when the father's not around. It's something that you're never going to find a good result from the father not being there.
And I mean, studying all of these little things, like just studying an aspect of the problem, like just how this, you know, pertains. I mean, you really can't get a full picture of a phenomena if you're just studying small aspects of it and comparing this aspect and this aspect with you know, unless you have an overview of what's going on, just kind of cherry picking little bits and statistically, I don't know, I wonder about the value of such research, because we have all of this research which would... a lot of it tends to be contradictory, although the general overall trend is sensible and does basically say that what common sense would tell you in the first place, that a child brought up without either of their biological parents is at a disadvantage. That would appear to be being borne by most of the studies. But then you get these little oddball things where they study something, you know, some small aspect of the situation, and come up with something that appears on the face of it to be contradictory. Difficult minefield to wade through.
Yes, now there's an article here from, we go over to the United States, the HuffPost Social News. There's an article here by Kirsten West Savali on October 24. And this examines the question that's also been raised on numerous occasions about the rights of men, whether men should be involved in the decision when the decision is made about an abortion. There's a lot of there's been a lot of commentary on the American case Roe versus Wade, and in fact, in a number of states, because it's a state, because it can be challenged on a state basis, the individual states are often attesting the Roe versus Wade decision right across the U.S. And the, of course, this is argued strongly by feminists that the repeal of Roe versus Wade would hold women hostage in their own bodies. Roe versus Wade, in fact, the decision, just in very briefly, was that allowing women to obtain abortions in America without breaking the law. But in all this discussion about women and Roe versus Wade and the right to have abortions, there's one person that seems to be ignored throughout, and that, of course, is the father. When all this deciding is going on, he's often relegated to being merely the sperm donor.
And this is the basis of the whole nonsense of equality between the sexes, the fact that ultimately it is a woman's choice in this day and age whether she proceeds with the pregnancy or not. No man is, or very few men are, have an equal say in that decision.
Yes, and yet it has very significant consequences for the father.
Oh, absolutely.
And for the child. I mean, if the decision is made by the mother to go ahead and have the baby, you, of course, you've got the whole child support agency swings into action. And just harking back to a story we were talking about a few minutes ago, the effect on the children of not having a father. So, I mean, if the father is excluded then from that from the raising of that child, the effect on the children is enormous. Just some of the figures quoted in this article: 63% of youth suicides are from fatherless homes. 90% of all homeless and runaway children are from fatherless homes.
Wow, that's telling. 90%. Yep. That's huge.
85% of all children who show behaviour disorders come from fatherless homes. Yeah. 80% of rapists with anger problems come from fatherless homes. 71% of high school dropouts come from fatherless homes. 75% of all adolescent patients in chemical abuse centres come from fatherless homes. 70% of youths in state-operated institutions come from fatherless homes. And finally, 85% of all youths in prison come from fatherless homes. So
a great way to solve all of these problems, which are huge social problems across the board, would be to get more fathers back in the house, yeah, and you could solve all of these problems.
Well,
all these social problems.
It would certainly seem to have a major role, and the fact that this is the outcome means that men do have this great responsibility when children are born, and it seems extraordinary that they're discounted in any decision as to whether there's going to be an abortion or not. So. This argument can even be framed as a no taxation without representation. If the woman, yep, decides to have the child, should she be entitled to child support for the next 18 years? So, there are some big decisions there, and it's one that's not going to go away. It's something that we're going to have to decide. So,
festering away quietly in the background. Well, I've got another article here, just quickly. This kind of backs up what you're saying. This is Dad Vital in Breast for Baby. New dads are being urged to become better educated about their role in helping partners breastfeed successfully. Early parenting educator Darren Varley said the actions of fathers in the days and weeks following birth can dictate whether their partner continues breastfeeding. If a father sees his wife struggling and reacts by buying formula in bottles, then that will have a detrimental effect. But if he has learnt about the importance of breastfeeding and about the mechanics of it, then he can instead help his wife through these difficult times. Mr. Varley, who spoke about the importance of fathers caring for newborns at the Australian Breastfeeding Association National Conference last week, said maternity hospitals had to do more to help educate new dads. So there you go. So somebody recognises that fathers are very, very, very important at all stages of bringing up children. We're not just sperm donors. The children need us. The mothers need us. We're necessary through the whole process.
Okay, well, we might go to a short music break, and we'll be back with our first guest today, Jason Hinks, the Chief Operating Officer of Movember.
Wasted kisses, red turns to blue. My kisses were wasted on you. Wasted hours and wasted pursuit. I was wasting my time picking the wrong fruit. The storm clouds opened. Down came the rain. was wasted lies, wasted kisses, wasted goodbyes, wasted kisses, red turns to blue, my kisses were wasted on you, wasted hours and wasted pursuit, I was wasting my time picking the wrong fruit, here today, left of value is sorrow, wasted kisses, a big wasted mess, we were wasted, I confess, yeah we were wasted, baby wasted, wasting all my time and all my kisses on you, wasted, baby, wasted, wasting all my time and all my kisses on you, yeah, we were wasted, baby, wasted, wasting all my time and all my kisses on you, yeah, we were wasted, baby, wasted, wasting all my time and all my kisses on you, the story has ended, the plot has run out, the paper was wasted, just writing it down, everything wasted, wasted for miles, wasted lives, wasted smiles, wasted kisses, red turns to blue, my kisses were wasted on you,
so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in distress. 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 25th day of October 2011. And as I mentioned before, we're getting very close to November, the month formerly known as November. And it's our pleasure and privilege this morning to speak to Jason Hinks, the Chief Operating Officer of Movember. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, Jason, Movember has had an incredible growth. I believe it began in 2003 in Melbourne, and it's now, well, if not worldwide, it's in a number of countries around the world, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So the campaign started in 2003, and it was started in the humble settings in Fitzroy in Melbourne, with a couple of blokes having a conversation about mustaches and bringing the mustache back. And here we are. This will be our ninth year later. And last year the campaign raised $72 million in 11 countries.
Yeah, it's absolutely extraordinary, and it's great that it actually started in Melbourne, and I think in the first year it raised something like $50,000 compared to, as you say, 70, was it 72 million?
That's correct, yeah, so from 56,000 through to 72 million, so the growth has been astronomical, and the support that we've seen in the general public has been amazing.
Yes, well, of course, it's a brilliant idea. It's one of those great marketing ideas that you come across every now and then, I think, but to have it such a visible demonstration of support. I've seen politicians, I've seen sportsmen, I've seen, myself, I've seen lots of people with those moustaches growing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's one of those fun things, and we certainly, as you just mentioned, the campaign has really, really connected with people, and I think at the core, it's the fact that it's something you can do, which is quite fun and quite irreverent, and allows really appeals to that Australian sense of taking the mickey out of yourself a bit, and a bit self-deprecating, and has really resonated with people.
Yeah, so Jason, could you tell us how does Movember work? I mean, apart from growing the moustache, what else is involved in this?
Yeah, so growing the moustache is the key part of Movember, but we encourage people to go to Movember.com, which is the website, and register. And when you register with Movember.com, you are able to put together a MoSpace page. And the MoSpace page really creates the platform for all of your activities. So you can then send off your emails and your requests to have people sponsor your Mo, and also an opportunity to post photos of your journey. There's some fun stuff on there as well, and an opportunity to communicate with other like-minded individuals who are taking part in Movember.
And it also extends to the women, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have about 17% of our fundraisers are women, certainly some of our most dedicated and passionate fundraisers are women. You certainly don't have to sport a Mo to be involved. We certainly welcome the Mo sisters getting on board as well.
Yep, so it's a great opportunity for everyone. And I've seen the list of countries. It even extends to Antarctica. Do you have any new countries that have joined this year?
Yeah, so we've had a steady increase. One of the countries that has come on board is what we call a tier one country is South Africa this year. So South Africa has been a good growth area for us. And then we have a number of countries throughout Europe. Places like the Czech Republic have started to really grow, and Spain continues to grow. So we've had some good growth in some weird and wonderful pockets of the world.
Yes, and is it all administered from Melbourne or from Australia, or is it how does it run?
Yes, so in terms of the organisation, the head offices are here in Australia, so all of our central services operate out of Australia. But we do have offices in LA, in London, and Toronto. And as far as the administering of funds, there are beneficiary partners in each of those territories. So all of the money raised in the Czech Republic, for example, remains in the Czech Republic. All the money raised in New Zealand remains within New Zealand. So there is that sense of when people do get involved and they are raising funds, that those funds will go directly back into their community and not be taken offshore.
That's right. And I think another comfort is that the application of the funds. Now, I've seen a chart here of the costs of fundraising for Movember, and it's down to an extraordinarily low number. I mean, relatively speaking, it's 91% goes to men's health programs, and there was a story in the news, I think, last night saying some of these other well-known charities, including the Surf Lifesaving, there's a much higher percentage goes to the administration. So that's another good reason that if you donate to Movember, it's actually going to these causes.
Yeah, it's something we're very proud of. Our cost ratios in Australia are 6%. Administration and of the charity is 6%. And as you would have seen in those articles that have been appearing in the news over the past couple of days, some charities do have much higher cost ratios. It's something we're very proud of, and we do strive to deliver as much of your fundraising dollar to the programs as possible.
And we're speaking with Jason Hinks, who's the Chief Operating Officer of Movember. Jason, perhaps could you tell us something about the programs that the money does go to?
Yeah, so I'll give you a couple of examples of the types of programs that November money goes to. One that we're very excited about this year is the Prostate Cancer Specialist Nurses program. And that program is going to put prostate cancer specialist nurses in hospitals around Australia. And those nurses will be focused on helping men navigate through the prostate cancer experience. And that's right from the diagnosis, navigating through the appropriate treatment, if treatment is necessary, and then dealing with the side effects and the issues that relate to treatment, after they've had that procedure done. So we're very proud about that program.
And is that done through the Prostate Cancer Foundation?
That's correct. So the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia is one of our two key beneficiary partners, and so they administer that program, and we've worked quite closely with them to ensure that there is a nice spread of locations for those nurses, so that all Australian men can benefit from them.
Yes, because prostate cancer is such an enormous problem in Australia, perhaps around the world, but I see here that close to 3,300 Australian men die of prostate cancer every year, which is an enormous loss. Perhaps it doesn't get quite the profile of breast cancer, but initiatives like Movember are going to give it that profile and hopefully get some more work done in the area.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an alarming figure. We see that one in three men will be affected by cancer at some time during their life, and it's one in six men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer. So it's an alarmingly high figure, and we certainly hope that the funds and awareness that is raised by the November campaign can impact that. And certainly, begin to have the type of impact that the Breast Cancer Awareness Organisation has had with breast cancer in women.
Yes, and was that the reason behind choosing the Prostate Cancer Foundation as one of the beneficiaries, or what went behind choosing them?
Yeah, so there's an interesting story that goes with how Movember landed on prostate cancer as a cause. When the founders had initially looked at who to partner with as a charity, the first instinct was testicular cancer. But when the founders had done some research on that particular disease, they found that that the impact was quite low, and that very few men died from testicular cancer, and that in fact, in most cases, providing it was diagnosed at a reasonably early stage, it was treatable in almost all cases. So when some further research was done and there was an understanding of just how much impact there was from prostate cancer in Australian men, it seemed like a no-brainer that was the cause that we really needed to raise some funds and awareness for.
Yes, and of course they have their very well-recognised champion for testicular cancer in Lance Armstrong, who has a worldwide fundraising effort for testicular cancer, whereas prostate cancer, perhaps it's more difficult to find someone who's going to be the face of the program, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the Livestrong Foundation, which is Lance Armstrong's foundation, is one of our beneficiary partners in America. So we do have variations. So in America, we have prostate cancer and then other men's cancers through the Livestrong Foundation. So we do certainly, vary and augment those beneficiary partners based on the requirement in that territory.
Okay. So in, say, the Czech Republic you mentioned, what do you know what their charities are likely to be?
So that is prostate cancer. So prostate cancer is a fairly consistent one for us. In every territory, we have prostate cancer as a beneficiary partner. But then the variation, I guess, is on the second, when we do have a second beneficiary partner. For example, in Australia, we saw that depression and anxiety were really a cause that required a great deal of awareness. So that's been the choice in Australia. In the UK and the US, it has been other cancers, such as testicular cancer, where we saw a greater gap in the market.
Yes, so Well, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the depression side of the charity. Now, I think your supporter there is Beyond Blue.
That's correct. So so we have Beyond Blue as our beneficiary partner for depression initiatives. And you know, some of the programs that we work with are the Beyond Blue Helpline. So the Beyond Blue Helpline provides phone-based support for men with issues that may be drivers for depression. And on an annual basis, 55,000 people are helped through that support line. A majority of those are men, and then there is another large percentage of those who are women who are seeking assistance for men.
Yes, and because depression is another very widespread complaint with the male population in Australia, isn't it? It's very widespread.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the drivers for us having the country gentleman theme this year for Movember was the fact that there is really an alarmingly high propensity for men in rural areas to suffer from depression and anxiety, and that's really comes from a combination of the historical value of blokes being slightly tougher nuts in the country and not necessarily talking about those issues that may historically have seemed a little soft, and also access to services is a key issue for men in rural areas.
Yes, well, it really laps across both areas, depression and prostate cancer, because for reasons that perhaps aren't fully understood, I understand the incidence of prostate cancer is higher in rural areas than it is in the city as well.
Yeah, and that's certainly true, and we also see, which stands to reason is that with not as great access to services in the country, that quite often men aren't being diagnosed with prostate cancer until they're much further along, and clearly prostate cancer is one of those diseases that the earlier you detect it, the greater range of treatment options are open to you. So, as I touched on before with the nurses program, we really do have a focus on making services available to blokes in the country.
Yes, and we will be speaking to David Gregory about his own personal experience in this area. But I noticed this year too that some different industries have particularly taken on Movember. The mining industry is going to fully support Movember. That's great to see.
Yeah, we certainly see mining, as you've identified, is one of those industries that we have some great support from, and it's one of those industries that is very male dominated, and so there is a real connection to the cause, and there's also quite a few Mo's floating around around those mining sites, so that's a kind of a natural one for us. We do see, though, that particularly in those more remote mining areas where there are, the fly-in, fly-out type arrangements for their employees, that certainly, both, prostate cancer and depression, certainly, rank very highly in the concerns of those organisations. So we've had great support from those companies, and we also do a great deal of awareness in those areas as well. So we try to get around to as many of those sites as possible and promote not only a healthy lifestyle but a greater understanding of how to access services and how to identify issues with depression and prostate cancer at an early stage.
Yes, the stress in that sort of lifestyle, which I think men will put up with for a while to get ahead financially, perhaps, but they do put an enormous stress on their bodies and on their minds in living that lifestyle. And I mean, it's great to see. I think some of the mining giants that are supporting Movember include Rio Tinto, BHP, Chevron, Halliburton, Woodside. It's a bit of a roll call, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think you hit a nail on the head there. I mean, these organisations, are aware that paying people more money isn't the only solution to the problems that people face when they're working in remote areas. So, we're very pleased and very encouraged by the fact that these organisations are engaging with us and other relevant organisations to make sure that their employees have as much greater awareness and information and access to services they can.
Yeah, look, that's great. And at another end of the employment spectrum, perhaps, but this year the restaurants are taking on a Movember's inaugural restaurant challenge. So it's extended to the chefs, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had from time to time support from various chefs and restaurants around the country. And we do have inquiries every year about how restaurants can get involved. So we thought it was a good timing to have the restaurant challenge, and we've certainly had a number of the big name restaurants in each city come on board. And it's good to see the chefs and the kitchen staff growing those. And in a lot of cases we've had moustache inspired dishes which are being served through the month of November, and with the popularity of chefs and restaurants, which has been kind of spurred on by MasterChef and various other programs, it just seems like a good environment to promote the message supported by November.
Oh, absolutely, and I might give a cheerio call to Peter Pan's restaurant in Crow's Nest, a local one for me, and it was great when I went up there last year and saw all the Mo's sprouting, and because it always leads to that question, are you doing it for Movember? And of course, one thing leads to another, and you're involved in a conversation about the whole program, which is fantastic, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's the case across the board in the month of November, and it is that not only do men grow mows to raise money for the causes, but it also is a conversation starter. And every year we have phenomenal stories of people who have initiated conversations because they've had a mow and they've ended up with amazing outcomes where people have been able to talk about issues they've had that they haven't felt comfortable talking about in the past. Because everyone feels a little bit outside of their comfort zone, a little bit silly sporting the mow. So it does create a nice environment for some conversation about what is normally a fairly uncomfortable subject matter.
Yes, that's right, and it gives men, I think, an opportunity to show out their creative and artistic side. I know at the annual party, which I was fortunate enough to go to last year, some of the costumes were absolutely brilliant. So very creative thought had gone into coming up with the costumes.
Yeah, it's certainly one of those situations where it never ceases to amaze me how passionate some of the Mo Bros and Mo Sisters can be, and nowhere else is that more evident than at the gala parties where people spend an enormous amount of time, effort, putting together those costumes, and they just get better every year.
They do. Hawaii 5 Mo was one that struck me last year, and there are quite a few other very good ones. And I noticed, in going back to the restaurant challenge, there are different awards. There's the Mo Maestro for the chef who grows the most impressive moustache. Then there's Motivation, Momentous, Locomotion, and Mo Money, going to the restaurant who raises the most money. So, I think there's a lot of creative thought going on both sides here, but that's great to see.
We're never shy of a Mo pun here at November.
No, and just another one I might mention is the emergency services of this year. They've joined in the Australian Police, Fire and Ambulance Services. Will be issued with a new uniform requirement that November is bound to raise a few curious eyebrows. When people turn up for emergency services and they've all got Mo's, I imagine it might cause a bit of a stir.
Yeah, I think that's it was a little bit of a no-brainer for us, the emergency services, because when you look around in police stations and firehouses and ambulance stations around the country, there's certainly a higher percentage of Mo's floating around. So you're never surprised to see a police constable rocking the Mo or a firefighter rocking the Mo. So it just seemed like a natural progression to get those guys on board in a more structured way.
Yep, and again, there's the 000 Cup, the Team Emo-gency, Beyond the Call of Duty, and Best Mo in Uniform. So, Mo, the force be with you with all these emergency services for this year. It's a fantastic initiative, Jason, and it's a fun thing to do. It's raising enormous amounts of money in these charities that perhaps get overlooked sometimes, and it's a way of doing it in a fun way, and it's been so incredibly successful to rise from 50,000 to millions of 72 million in a matter of 8 years is just extraordinary. So we haven't got too much time left, but I just wanted to congratulate you and congratulate Movember again on such a successful campaign, and let's hope that Movember 2011 is bigger and better than all the previous years.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for your support. And we look forward to seeing lots more mows sprouting come November.
Yes, yes. Well, Dad's on the Air are great supporters, and certainly I will be doing my best to once again get that hairy upper lip, the third eyebrow, and it's going to be great, a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. So, Jason, could we thank you once again for being on the program, and we wish you all the very best in the campaign.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jason.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
It's not time to make a change. Just relax, take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. I was once like you are now, and I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on. But take your time, think a lot. Why, think of everything you've got, for you will still be here tomorrow, but your dreams may not. Same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go. Time to make a change. Just sit down, take it slowly. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to go through. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air this 25th of October. Yes, 25th of October 2011. We're still in October.
And, no, indeed, it's not Movember yet.
No, and our next guest is David Gregory. David was diagnosed with and treated for prostate cancer late 1999, early in 2000, and David has a story to tell. David, good morning.
Morning, Bill.
And how are you this morning?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Very well indeed.
That's great. David... You were diagnosed in late 1999. I imagine that came as a big shock to you.
Yeah, you really can't begin to express the cold, numb feeling when the doctor mentions that big word, cancer.
Mm. And you had no indication prior to that, I understand.
No, none at all. Which is just compounds the shock, of course. I just had to go for a few other things I was having checked out, you know, blood pressure, that sort of stuff. And whilst the doctor was organising a round of blood tests, he said, well, we'll do a PSA as well. I said, oh, good, go ahead. Whatever PSA is, go right ahead.
Not knowing what PSA was, even, yep.
I had no idea what PSA meant, and I stupidly enough, because I'm a man and men are stupid about their health, I didn't even ask him until I got a phone call a few days later asking me to go and talk to him because the PSA was elevated. That's when I found out what it is, and it's prostate-specific antigen, which is secreted by the prostate gland for use in sexual activity.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of that leaches out into the bloodstream. So an indication of prostate problems is when that PSA level goes up to a little bit more than it should be.
So it doesn't necessarily indicate that you've got prostate cancer, but it's a warning sign. Is that correct?
Bill, there's the only definitive way of actually diagnosing prostate cancer is the taking of biopsy samples from the prostate itself. What the PSA does, coupled with another wonderful test, which is called DRE, which is a digital rectal examination, it indicates that there is, whether there is or is not, the need to investigate further and go to that biopsy level.
Yeah, I think that's what puts a lot of blokes off, isn't it, that DRE that you just referred to?
Well... Yeah, it is. That's the one thing that blokes don't want to have the doctor stick his finger up there. Mm. But I can assure all your concerned listeners that it takes a matter of about 4 or 5 seconds. It's totally painless, and it's really necessary for all men in the age group to have a full check on the condition of the prostate.
So it's really just a bit of discomfort for, as you say, for a few seconds, and then you at least you know where you stand.
Well, exactly, and literally those 4 or 5 seconds, because you see the position of the prostate. Whoever designed the human being made a hell of a choice to locate the prostate where he or she located it in men, because it's the only way to get at it physically is via the back passage. There's no other way to physically be able to touch it, to feel the hardness and the lumps, and that's what they're looking for when they do the DRE.
So that's what the doctor's looking for. What actually is the cancer? Is it a cyst or?
It forms a tumour like all cancers. The cancer, the formation of cancer starts where the body is constantly renewing all the cells, the trillions of cells that make up the body. They're constantly dying and being replaced and being shed. You know, when you sweat and when you go to the toilet and all those things, all those dead cells are being shed. What cancer is one of those silly little cells doesn't want to go. So it stays there and dies there and stays there, and that's the start of any cancer, whatever it is or wherever it is, and more cells just join it, and the cells join together and they form what we know as a tumour or a lump or whatever you want to call it.
And then the danger is that we'll go from there to somewhere else in the body, I understand.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's a sort of a double jeopardy thing, Bill, because in early prostate cancer, which is a small, minute tumour hidden well away inside the prostate, doesn't show any symptoms. You don't know it's there. By the time symptoms do start to show their ugly head, quite often that cancer has grown to the degree where it's escaped from the prostate and it's travelling throughout the body. And when prostate cancer is inside the prostate, it can be treated and cured, as in my case. Mm. When it escapes, it can be treated, but it can't be cured. So, that's the difference for all the guys out there. Get it checked early, because if it is there, you do want to know about it and you want to take the appropriate steps.
Yes. Now, did your doctor give you all this information on treatments and side effects and recovery procedures and all these things?
What my urologist said to me was, at the first interview, when he told me that I had the cancer, he said, well, I've got a bit of bad news. You've got cancer, what you need is an operation. That was it.
Oh, okay.
Said nothing else. Okay. So I said, well, that's all right. I know about prostate cancer. It's just an old man's disease, slow growing, You die with it, not from it. I'll think about it, because I don't want to have an operation. I'll think about it and come and see you in 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then he said to me, well, I'm sorry, but you haven't got 6 months. Oh. Can you imagine what I felt when he said that?
It focused your mind, I'm sure.
I'm going to die. I'm going to die immediately if I don't have this operation. Now, the fact of the matter is, Bill, he didn't mean that at all. What he meant was to delay it unnecessarily can mean that the cancer will escape from the prostate and spread through the body. He didn't mean in 6 months' time I'd be dead, but I thought he did.
Mm.
It was a very, very frightening experience. Thank God things are a lot better today. The urologists and other doctors are a lot more savvy. They're a lot more understanding of what the patient needs to know, and there's lots of more information available. For example, Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia has just released a thing called the Localised Cancer Patient Pack. Localised cancer, meaning still inside the prostate. And when you go to your urologist for a get diagnosed with cancer, he will now hand you one of these patient packs.
Yes.
Inside which there are all sorts of information, there's DVDs, there's books, there's brochures, and there's a sort of a patient diary where you can track your procedure. So things have come a hell of a long way in the last 10 or 12 years.
Yes, I saw a survey in 2002 which said that 78% of women felt well informed about breast cancer, but only 52% of men felt informed. Well, hopefully those percentages have changed a bit, and that we've increased the level of information for men about prostate cancer.
Yeah, and frankly, Bill, I got to say, I would even challenge the 52% figure for those number of years ago, because I'm involved in a prostate cancer support group, and from time to time we go and attend functions, whether it be seminars or shows and trade shows and stuff, and we hand out information about the prostate. And I guess virtually every man knows that he's got a prostate, and every man knows that he should do something about it. But beyond that, very few men know exactly what is the prostate, where is it, and what does it do.
Mm.
And what are the implications of doing nothing?
Mm. So, David,
that's what we try to do at the support groups. There's 115 of them all around Australia, where guys have been diagnosed and their partners. Particularly important that the wives, carers, and partners be involved. They can go and get this information and talk to other blokes that have been trod the same path, you know, and get a bit of help and a bit of support.
Yeah. So since you got through this I guess it was a crisis. Since you got through this crisis, you've actually put back into the community by working with these support groups and trying to get the message out.
Yeah, I got over the operation and so on, went back to work and so on and so forth, and continued to do that for a few years, and then I decided that 3 or 4 years ago that it was time to put back a bit, and became involved in the prostate cancer support group movement from under the auspices of Prostate Cancer Foundation, just to try and sort of spread the message out there that the more blokes that get tested early, then the more successful outcomes there's going to be.
And you are one of those successful outcomes, because that was 1999. We're now in 2011, and you're feeling great. And so you're one of the success stories.
That's right, mate. Absolutely. No signs of cancer. Even now, I still have a PSA test every year, and it's been zero for the last almost 12 years. So I'm pretty happy with that, and a living proof that if you get to it early and get rid of it, sure, there's side effects, sure, there's problems involved, because we're talking about deep inside the human body, but all of those problems can be managed and treated and helped along. But prostate cancer can't be cured once it's spread outside the capsule.
Mm. And David, how old were you when you were diagnosed?
I was 59.
59. So, that's one of the danger ages. I see it does go up as you get older, doesn't it?
Yeah. The thing about prostate cancer is that typically the age band for most diagnoses is somewhere between sort of 65 and 80. But we are seeing more and more younger men, younger meaning as low as even down as low as 40 or 42. The thing is, if you diagnose, if you got the cancer at that early age, it tends to be more aggressive and tends to be more virulent, because there's a hell of a... It feeds on testosterone, the male hormone. And so the younger you are, the more aggressive the cancer, the more likely it is to spread. So we are seeing more and more guys coming along to our groups and being diagnosed at younger ages.
Mm. And some groups of men are more likely to get it than others. I see here the Vietnam Veterans Association have a 53% higher mortality rate than the average population of from prostate cancer, which surprising, I suppose, but we don't really know what the causes are, do we?
No, we don't. There's theories about, and the Vietnam vets that I speak to from time to time talk about things like exposure to Agent Orange during the deforestation of the plantations in Vietnam, but there's no real proof that that is the reason for it.
Mm.
But you know, obviously they've been through some experience that makes them more liable to it than other people, which is, again, through DVA, the Department of Veterans Affairs actually produces a prostate cancer booklet for veterans, and that's available from DVA. They've just got to ring up and ask, and they'll send that out in the mail. So,
Well, that's a good thing to know.
Any man who's over the age of 50 needs to be seriously talking to his doctor about his prostate. And if he's got a close family history, brother, father, uncle or whatever, he needs to do it from the age of 40.
Mm.
The other benefit of doing that, of course, Bill, is if you do start having a regular PSA test, even if it's not indicative of any issues, it then gives you what your sort of personal score is, if you like. And then over the years you can track that. And if suddenly at some stage there is a sudden spike, then you're onto it straight away.
Yes. Yes, a friend of mine used to go for annual checks. He missed one, and would you believe, the next one they found that it was he had raging prostate cancer. It was the very one that he missed was the important one, but you don't know.
It's such a common story. We hear it so often. You know, guys, please don't neglect it. Men are very silly about their health. They don't want to talk to the doctor because there's nothing wrong with me. And particularly when you talk about prostate, which is closely involved with their sexual activity, and you know, I'm not going there because I won't have any sex life afterwards. All those things that you hear constantly from men, they really need to get over it and get to that doctor and talk to him about it.
Yes, we're speaking with David Gregory, who was diagnosed with and treated for prostate cancer. David, yeah, you just mentioned one of the other statements made by men as reasons why they don't want to have a check, and that is the side effects. Now, you mentioned one. There are other side effects that are often referred to, aren't there?
Yes, there are. The two. It depends what the treatment is. With advanced prostate cancer, if you're undergoing hormone or chemotherapy treatment, then you will get side effects from that. But in terms of the initial treatment, whether it be surgery or radiation, the two major side effects and the ones that cause blokes the most concern are urinary incontinence and possibly bowel incontinence, but that's a little rarer, and erectile dysfunction, when you're no longer capable of forming an erection. Now, it's true that if you have an operation or if you have the radiation directly onto the prostate, yes, you will in fact have both of those side effects, but they both are treatable. And in fact, if you're a normal, fit, healthy sort of bloke, by and large, they almost sort of fix themselves over a period of time. It may take a few months, but eventually you will be back to being able to control when you want to go to the toilet, and your erections will come back. But even if they don't, there are ways that there are people out there that can help to control those things.
Well, that's a message that has to get out. What are the usual questions that are put to you at your meetings with these support groups?
It's as varied as there are men in the group, but mostly people want to know if they have been treated for localized cancer. They tend not to be long term members of the group because they get better over a few months, but they want to know, you know, what's available in the erectile dysfunction area. What questions should I ask a doctor or physiotherapist or a continence nurse about my incontinence and those sorts of things? Where you have men who, in fact, are suffering from advanced prostate cancer, which simply means that it's outside the prostate itself, then they, of course, are very interested in all the new treatments that are coming along, the new drugs that are coming onto the market, which are happening, you know, all the time. And the treatments and drugs are getting better and better, you know, almost month by month. Millions of dollars spent in Australia and around the world on research. And those are the things that the guys like to keep up with. The clinical trials that are going on and of new drugs, the people who run the trials often come to the groups and say, well, you know, we need half a dozen people to participate in this trial, and they're very, very happy to do that.
So I imagine these people are perhaps taking down notes. Would you recommend that you do form a list of questions when you go and see your doctor?
I think it's essential. The information as to sort of what sort of questions should you ask is available. The best source, in fact, is a super little book that's put out by cancer councils around Australia. And a phone call to the Cancer Council hotline will produce, they will send you a brochure that says these are the sorts of questions you need to ask your doctor. And a number of other brochures available from Prostate Cancer Foundation as well.
And probably best to take them along because as we've mentioned a number of times, it's a fairly emotional topic, and you might lose your place if with the questions you really want to get answered.
There's no doubt about that. And the other thing that we always highly recommend the blokes to take along to the discussions with their doctor, the urologist or whoever, is their wife or partner. Because two of you sitting there will cover the information better. The mind just goes blank. If your wife's sitting there, she can ask the questions that the bloke immediately forgets.
Yes, and it's And the other thing, I think if you go through these sources, you mentioned the Prostate Cancer Foundation, the Cancer Council, you can get the accurate figures, because all sorts of figures get bandied about on the on prostate cancer and all sorts of cancer that you really do need to find out the truth, don't you, about what is actually going on?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there are statistics produced every year by the Commonwealth Bureau of Statistics. They list all cancers and they list the diagnoses and mortalities. Diagnoses of prostate cancer are clearly on the increase, possibly or even probably because more men, in fact, are getting tested. But the good news is that in the sort of last 10 years, the number of deaths, whilst the number of mortalities is increasing, as a percentage of diagnoses, it's decreasing. So in other words, the testing certainly appears to be an effective way of avoiding the mortality statistic, if you like.
Yes, well, I've seen figures showing that prostate cancer is the most common cancer in Australian men, the second most common cause of cancer deaths. So it just shows what a significant issue this is in the community.
Well, both those statistics are true, and the actual raw figures that we have, the latest raw figures we have showed that we're talking, I think, 2009, just over 19,000 men around Australia were diagnosed with prostate cancer, and 3,300 died from it. So it's out there. It's more prevalent than breast cancer is in women, and the only cancer that kills more men in men is lung cancer.
Mm. Yeah, it's major. And I also see that there's a higher risk in regional areas. Do you manage to get out outside the metropolitan areas with your message?
Oh, certainly we do. of our 115 support groups, certainly 40% of those are in regional areas around Australia. And the other service provided by Prostate Cancer Foundation is the Ambassador Program. We have guys and girls who are trained up in all of the aspects of prostate cancer, who are quite happy to go along to meetings of organisations, perhaps it's Lions Clubs or Rotary or whatever, your local RSL, and give talks on prostate cancer, and a good percentage of those are done in the country. The statistic is that if you have prostate cancer and live in the country, you're 21% more likely to die from it. Mm. Again, it's anecdotal, and we really don't know why, other than the fact that the guys in the bush appear to be more reluctant to get checked out early.
Mm.
Through other pressures, maybe work pressures, they haven't got time, or it's too far to go, or whatever, you know. But we really need those guys out there to get to their doctor and talk about it once they get past that magic age.
Yes. Well, you've had some high-profile people involved. I think Magda Zabanski is one that comes to mind. I think her father died of prostate cancer.
Well, there's quite a few. Just a sec, Bill. Sorry, mate. I'll turn the damn thing off. sorry about that.
That's all right.
You can think of quite a few high-profile men. Alan Jones was recently treated with prostate cancer. Alan Joyce, the chairman of Qantas, was recently treated for prostate cancer. Going around the country, Wayne Swan, the federal treasurer himself, is a prostate cancer survivor. So, there's no demarcation disputes here. But you're at risk.
No, and I think you particularly want to get the message out to people. As you said, in their 40s, if they've got a family history, but certainly any male over 50 should be going for checks.
Please go and talk to your doctor about it, and consider seriously having yourself checked. Look, it's a simple blood test. There's no pain involved. The DRE is over and done in 5 seconds, and then at least you know, and you can't manage or treat something that you've got if you don't know you've got it.
That's very true. Well, David Gregory, we're running out of time, but I'd particularly like to thank you. I mean, you've been speaking very openly and frankly about the condition, which I think some people are reluctant to, but it's just so necessary to get the message out. So we're very grateful for you to coming on the program and telling us about the work, and we can only wish you all the very best as you continue with your support groups and your work around Australia.
Bill, it's been my pleasure, and the more I can do to spread the message, I'm very happy to do it. No problem at all.
That's wonderful. So thank you again, David Gregory, who was diagnosed with, treated for prostate cancer, and is here to tell us about it. David, once again, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
TV. TV.
Dads in Distress, meeting your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air. This is the last time for today. We're just about run out of things to bring you, but we'd like to especially thank our guests today, Jason Hinks, the Chief Operating Officer of Movember, and David Gregory, who was diagnosed with and treated for prostate cancer. So I can hear the music starting up, but don't forget you can go to our website, www.dadsontheair.com.au. That's .com.au, and you'll get this program probably by tomorrow up on the net. And there's a whole lot of other information on that website, so make sure you go to that site. And next week we'll be starting our lead-up into International Men's Day. International Men's Day is on 19th of November 2011, and this year's theme is giving boys the best possible start in life. So thank you for joining us today, and we'll be back next week with another big program. Until then, it's bye from Dads on the Air.
That's it.
We're Dads on the Air. We're here 'cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're Dads on the Air. We're Dads on the Air.
Now you can listen to your local station anywhere in the world. Go to our website www.893fm.com.au and click on the Listen Now button. Our website is also a great way to keep in touch with our presenters and to send us an email. Now 89.3 can be your local station, wherever you are.